It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave. Once again, with a very special guest, our very own, your very own, team physician, Dr. Klaus, with us. We're all in a place called Sun Prairie, which is just outside of Madison, Wisconsin. And we have been spending a tremendous boys' weekend that included the UW, the University of Wisconsin women's volleyball team game on Friday, the Milwaukee Brewers game over at American Family Field on Saturday, then an entire day of NFL football on a huge... Dave, how big is that screen? 70-inch? I mean, that's a huge screen this place has.
It's bigger than... Yeah, I think it's bigger than 60. 75 is probably right. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it is a big honking screen. This place, I don't know, should we give an advertisement for this? It is... If you're coming to Madison and you're renting an Airbnb, this is the place to be. It is spectacular here.
They've thought of everything at this place. Sugar for coffee, there it is. Here. Is there a desk for my work? Here it is. Oh, look, there's a little stand to charge my phone right next to on the desk. Like, they have thought of everything here. So we lucked out with this Airbnb. That's right.
There's even a board game room.
That's right.
I couldn't believe it. It's like a picnic table, so you can do board games, and there's a dartboard down there, and it is spectacular. Whoever these folks are, they did it right. So if you're coming to Madison, you know, email us, and we'll give you the secret of where this place is. So at any event, we're here to talk about the Green Bay Packers. But before we do that, I don't have my script in front of me, but I do know that there's a mythical place that's just over everyone's horizon. It's called theticketking.com. Yes. Yes, indeed. Theticketking.com. If you are a Packers fan and you're looking for Packers tickets, where do you go? Not the ticket office at Lambeau. No. One of those big, you know, oh, look, we can StubHub. Yeah, you can buy tickets and we'll, you know, jack up the price by $300. No. Theticketking.com. That is where you go. Or you can go to their physical locations in Green Bay or Milwaukee. Klaus took a picture of Dave and I in front of the sign. And if you're very good, we can even send you a picture. We should actually send it to CD and Al so they can show the folks at theticketking.com that we love them. So anyway, if you're looking for tickets for Wisconsin sports activities, theticketking.com, or you can go to packersstock.com tickets, and we'll fix you up there too as well. Okay, so let's talk about a 40-40 tie. A tie by itself. Now, Klaus is going to talk a little bit about ties in European soccer, which he's very familiar with, and he's very chill about this whole thing. But I think I am more like our friend Brad Elliott, the architect. Is Brad in St. Louis or is he Kansas City? I forget where he is exactly, but he's an architect. He knows how to draw.
He is where he is. He's right where he's supposed to be.
Wherever you go, Brad, there you are. Okay. So this may be the best email in Packers Therapy history. And it's because it's a taut construction. One single sentence is perfect. This is from Brad the architect. I need a week off before I can watch any more of that shit. I don't know of any more poetic way of putting a 40-40 tie, and there's a lot to talk about, and we're going to talk a lot about it. All I'm going to say before I turn it over to you guys, that was a tie which felt more like a loss to me. So, Dave, you go, and then you can hand it off to Klaus.
All right. My impressions first. Is that what you're doing? By the way, what was the title of that email? Do you remember what the subject line was?
Yes. And I should have read the subject line. The subject line is, the bye came at the perfect time.
Yes. Once again, I don't know how the schedulers do it, but it seems every year they masterfully set that bye week at just the right time.
Brilliant.
It's right up there with, he was hurt all season, you know, which is why he sucked so bad. Then time zones and all the other cliches that we have.
Yeah, exactly.
So here's a cliche of tying is like, what do they say? Tying is like something like with your sister. I forget exactly.
Something involving lips and other. Yeah.
Okay. Not something I'm not familiar with. So I guess the Klaus is going to talk a little bit. I won't steal his thunder, but so I did say as we went into the game, this is sort of a no win situation, really. Mm-hmm. And which they didn't. They did, but it was, you know, this
no win.
To me, they had to beat the Cowboys. They had to beat them soundly to get the taste out of my mouth of the Cleveland game. Mm-hmm. They have to reestablish the dominance I thought they had, you know, in the first 2 weeks. So I figured hopefully the offense can kind of figure it out and the defense can be dominant. And Dallas seems to be in the right place to just dominate in a place that we do normally. I saw, you know, we were in Nashville, Klaus. They had the Bears-Cowboys game on, and it looked like the Bears were soundly beating them. You know, there someone was intercepting. I don't know if it was Prescott or some other quarterback. I don't know. It seemed like they were turning the ball over every 5 minutes. I thought it's not a matter of how we beat Dallas. It's how they have to beat them so soundly that Cleveland was the aberration. That's not what happened, Chris and Klaus. That's not what happened at all. In fact, and I get that there are three things to me that I find either disturbing or confusing. Is one is the special teams. The special teams continually seem to steer a game in a path where we are in trouble. Like I'm a big person that every game has its own path. If this changed, the path might be different. Like the Packers might have won by 40 if they had kicked that extra point, went up 14-0, and rather than give Dallas, you know, life. I don't know, but that's not what happened. Special teams gave away 3 points, two on the safety and one on the block extra point. That seemed to kind of turn that game around. So, again, special teams is an issue. Rich Bisaccia, I mean, we should all, I don't know, it hasn't been since who's the I can't remember people who was the defensive coordinator we soundly hated Joe Barry.
Barry, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Joe Barry looks good to me compared to Bisaccia right now. I mean, how is Bisaccia still employed? I think it has something to do with the floor mm-hmm. and his confidence. Like I think Bisaccia right. probably must fill some kind of either they're close. He's kind of a senior statesman for him. He can bounce ideas. Right. He's like his older, you know, his mentor yeah. or, you know, he's
like a warm blanket.
Yeah. yeah I mm-hmm. think, so that's my one. My two is, look, Jordan Love had a really, I think, overall good game. Statistically, you'd have to say that's true, but the trap door fell open right before half and he gave the ball, you know, over to that team and they scored, you know, 7 points off it. His mistakes cost us huge points. And he did it at a terrible time. The broadcast talked about the Dallas says he's careless with the ball. He can, you know, don't just tackle him, try and get swipe at the ball and you're going to get it. And they got it at that point. So that was my two is, you know, I think Love had did well, but he again, just did something just to really derail things. The third is the most confusing for me is what in the world happened to the defense in the second half. And in particular, I think that the dominance that they showed in the first couple weeks was because not just Parsons, but because of our linebackers and a few of the other, you know, Gary and some others. And they feel like they all disappeared. I feel like Cooper had a terrible game. I didn't think he could have a terrible game. I thought we could have a bad game, but he's going to always be active. He felt like he was missing tackles and was invisible. I mean, Rashawn Gary, I don't know if we mentioned his name talking to each other at all. Like this defense completely disappeared and I can't figure it out. They went from maybe some of the best defense that we've ever had, you know, talking about maybe Baltimore or the past or some of the great defenses, like this could really be it to like, this is what it looked like last year. And that is, I never thought we were going to talk about that in this podcast. So
I think last year's defense looked better than what we saw last night.
Maybe. But and maybe because, you know, everyone, they figured out that they have to put pressure on the quarterback mm-hmm. in different mm-hmm. ways. And last night they spent a lot of time mm-hmm. rushing just four and advertising only four rushing. I mean, we talked about that among the three of us, four linemen. Every once in a while they do five linemen. I guess they show that on the broadcast, but there's very rarely that kind of that crowding on the line of scrimmage that there's confusion, who's coming, who's not. It was kind of like boom, boom, boom. And then you could kind of make your plan. Here's Parsons. What are we going to do? He's not moving around. You know, there's no confusion. It was pretty, vanilla because I'm sure they thought we can get pressure with four and that's going to work, and it didn't. And they didn't adjust very well because they scored 40 points. So I think overall, when I think of those things, yes, it's a tie with a heavy dose of disappointment of the tie, even though I don't think we deserve to even tie. We deserve to lose that game. And we're lucky to tie. We're in second instead of last in the NFC North. But I'm disappointed, and my whole season trajectory just completely tilted like 90 degrees. Like, it's crazy. So that's my initial thoughts. Klaus, I'll kick it over to you.
Okay. I'll bring a bit of Scandinavian sunlight into this podcast then, because I'm not as disappointed as you, because ties, as you know, is very, very common in European soccer, and sometimes you even play for a tie. So I'll break that down in a minute.
Bleeding, hearing that. That's weird.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. Yeah.
Yeah. I know that. I'll just explain a little bit how I feel. Same as you, Dave. I feel there was, at least for me, it was like three key moments in the game. It's the blocked extra point, which really, really changed everything, because we started out really good. The offense were changing it up. They were moving down the field. And the defense at that point seemed to be like the ones we have been seeing, at least I would say, for the first three games, because the defense didn't play that badly against Cleveland either. They held them actually to 6 points or something, because the other one was the interception.
I'd say three.
3 points, yeah. But to start with, everything looked fine. Then we had the blocked extra point, which cost us 3 points, two to them, one less to us. And then we had the Love fumble. And you could argue that, was it bad by Love or was it just good defense play? I don't know, but it came at the worst possible time. And yes, we got like, oh no, it's happening again. But that changed the trajectory of the whole game. But on the whole, we played pretty good. And the other way to look at it was that this was for people who are not fans of either team, it must have been a joy to watch. This is a classic game. It ended 40-40 into overtime. How lucky are we to have a team that can play such a game? Such entertainment, such fun, such frustration, the whole roller coaster of feelings. We are lucky to experience that. How much better than watching the Cleveland Browns, which their heyday was winning a game scoring 13 points. I mean, so you could look at this as a half full glass as well. And as to go for the ties, like, there are three types of ties. There's the tie when you really deserved the win and you thought you were totally robbed. Then you are disappointed by a tie. But the other one is when you feel really lucky. You should have lost. By some miracle, they didn't score, and you got lucky, and you got really lucky, and you didn't deserve it, but you didn't lose. And the third one is when nobody deserved to lose, because both teams were putting in a great effort. And I think this one, nobody really deserved to lose. If I remove my Packer jersey and just look at it as objectively as possible, if that's possible, I would say this was a game where nobody deserved to lose. So I'm actually quite fine with that tie. And I think the last two drives for Packers were actually quite good. They had good time management. They scored when they had to. It was a pressure situation, both the last drive in regular time and the last drive in overtime. Only thing, Love did confuse me, and we were totally scared when he decided to throw the ball with 8 seconds. My guess is that he looked at the game clock and thought it was 26 seconds. That's the only explanation I can have. And he just got so lucky that there was 1 second on the clock. But on the whole, when the results came in, we were exhausted after watching that many hours. How many hours was that game? Three and a half, four hours? Yeah, 4 hours. Four hours of high octane offense. I mean, you could say that it's pretty good to have a team that can score 40 points. Defense, totally frustrating, totally not playing up to their best, but still, it was a classic game. Wow. And I can't go away from that with just disappointment. I was entertained. But I was watching with you, and also when I watch at home, very often you just feel frustration when the Cowboys score, and when the Packers score, you just feel relief instead of real joy, because like it's only downside when they have the ball. Oh, I'm sure they're gonna go three and out, and when they score, oh, it's relief instead of like, oh yeah, that was really, really good. But looking back at it, scoring 40 points in the second half, I think they scored on every drive, and you really can't fault that.
Okay, well, we've had enough of your misperceptions, Klaus.
Yeah. Yeah, just one more thing.
Yeah,
okay. We lost the turnover battle 2-0. I think we didn't have any turnovers, and the Cowboys had two. And very seldom do you not lose football games when you're down two in turnovers. And we even managed that. So maybe that's something to be just a little bit happy about, that we got lucky to do that.
So, Dave, please deconstruct all of that.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I guess Scandinavia and Norway are the happiest people on earth. They can watch that and are happy. Where I looked at that and, it's... Because to me, it's not... Yes, you could look at it a couple ways. That was 4 hours of, I guess, on the edge of your seat, entertainment. Yeah. I think you could say that. I mean, I find myself every run, like my body tenses. I'm trying to the back needs to push forward for a few yards. I can just feel myself. Like I did that every single play the Packers had the ball, for four straight hours. Again, imagine a TV show that could do that for you. Like I can't watch a 2 hour movie without checking my watch at the hour mark. Like how much time is left? I'm willing to sit through commercials, to get to the real stuff. Like it's incredible. Like what, it's an incredible 4 hours, right? Emotional. But to me, it's not, was that a good 4 hours? To me, it's like, what is the next, 13 games going to be, right? What where it's going? And it looks like, I thought I was going to have 13 games, of which maybe 10 or more were going to be good times. Like, we're going to be smashing teams and, some might be boring, but we'll win, and it's going to be fantastic. And I realize we're in for a 13-game roller coaster that's going to destroy me at times. Like, this team is slightly better. This is the same team as last year with maybe one less Christian Watson, but one more Micah Parsons, which I thought was a real game tilter, but... I don't know anymore. Is it now they figured him out? Is he, if you play him all game, maybe we would go back to maybe you should play him a little less and like make it a big deal. Here comes Micah on third down. But, it's not what I thought we had. I got sold a bill of goods in the first 2 weeks. And unless that really changes, I'm very disappointed about that.
Okay.
So I think Micah Parsons maybe played hurt. I think if it wasn't the Cowboys, they wouldn't have been using him as much. I think you saw him went into the tent with low back pain. He also, was it last game, he really got hit to the head. So maybe he has some concussion issues. I don't know. But I didn't think he was. He had that game-saving tackle at the end of the game. But otherwise, I think he didn't play up to his full potential. And he might, like you said, the cliche here. Cliche. He might be playing hurt.
Well, I do have thoughts on some of these points. In the morning, we were lucky enough to watch the Vikings and Steelers. Good game. We had a lot of interest in it because You had Aaron Rodgers on one side, the Vikings on the other. And that's what it felt like, I think, for a lot of people watching the game. We enjoyed the heck out of that game. That was a great, great football game. Very exciting football game. But we weren't invested in it the way we were in the last game of the day. And I think that when you're invested that way, that colors your perceptions. So, yes, I think you could enjoy that game. Even if you're a Packers fan, you could enjoy the game just because it was exciting and it ended the way it did. But when you start to break it down and you begin to look at what it means, I think what Dave said a few minutes ago is just where I am too. It almost feels like, you know, you woke up one day at you're 43 years old and you found out that you were adopted. Your whole life is turned right now. You no longer know what's true, what's not. The first two games, I said on this podcast, you know, this defense is airtight. My God, special. This is the defense I think that's the word that I used. And now I find out, starting in the second half against Cleveland, there's some cracks there. Cleveland was able, with a shitty offense, able to move the ball. I thought, I was uncomfortable with that. But I thought, it's an aberration. You know, it's fine. We saw a continuation of that. It maybe was a coincidence, but after the blocked extra point, that seemed to turn everything around. It was a three-point switch. They didn't get the extra point, and they lost two, which is just, it's embarrassing, and it seemed like everything after that was a struggle. So I'm thinking, well, you know, that the Cowboys' offense is limited. They've got guys hurt. No CeeDee Lamb, right? So they're gonna be able to close this thing down, right? Well, no, they weren't able to do that. And it's almost, what I hated the most was that this was a big game that Micah Parsons, until the end, disappeared. Now, I know, you know, he was in the tent with the back issue and all that stuff. I think he might have got his bell rung, as Klaus mentioned the week before. There could be reasons. But this is what we saw as Packers fans when he was on Dallas. And we play these games, and he wasn't a factor. And he wasn't really a factor. Now, I looked back at the stats today because, again, perceptions are oftentimes faulty. He had 8 pressures. It sure didn't feel like he made that kind of difference.
The game we took him down in the playoffs? Or last game?
In the game last night?
Oh, that's last game. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought you went back to the... Because you're right. You make a good point. Just to cut you off there, and then you go back. Yeah. But yeah, that game where we beat them in the playoffs, 40 to whatever, like we blew them out. Micah Parsons played that game, right? I can remember Aaron Jones was a big part of, you know, kind of helping block him. And we put 40 points on the board, like moved up and down the field. And Micah Parsons played on that team. I always wonder, how does Micah Parsons coming to our team going to make us world beaters, you know, if it wasn't necessarily true for Dallas? But I thought, well, it's because we have Gary and Cooper and, you know, Walker and all these guys. Well, it turns out if they don't show up, then he can't carry it on his own. So sorry to interrupt you.
No. I'm actually glad you did, because I needed to open up my soda. So thank you.
Okay.
But
he did save the game. He did save the game at the end. I'm pretty sure Prescott walks in the end zone. And if that was LVN chasing, I don't think he gets him. No. I think Barre, you know, he's not catching him. So, you know, we're sitting at 2-1-1 versus 2-2 because of Parsons. And maybe that gives you something. Yeah. But the defense collapsed.
Yeah, but that is a game-saving tackle, and I think our feelings would be even more hurt if they lost this game. Going into our overtime, it would be a Jerry Jones party with firecrackers and everything post-game. So even if we're slightly disappointed about the draw, it's so much better than the loss.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Jerry Jones, because in the accounts that I've read today, he was basically gloating like he won. You know, I believe he said, well, Dak Prescott was indispensable. Micah Parsons, not so much. And it's like, whoa, okay. You know, that's a shot across the bow. But dude, you know, your team tied at home. You didn't win that game. But he was treating it like a win, and I'm sure he felt like a win. But it's the opposite for us. You know, it was a tie game, and there were things to be optimistic about, but it feels like a loss. And it's just, one of those human perception things. It's a part of our reality. But when you break down some of those stats, you know, Parsons played, he was much more of a factor than he seemed to be, at least if you go by the number of pressures, quarterback hits, those kinds of things. It just didn't seem to matter, though. And maybe the most disturbing part was how, you know, Dallas was able to effectively move the ball on the ground. And maybe the reason was the guy number 95 for the Cowboys, I believe, Kenny Clark, you know, he's no longer there. And when Devontae Wyatt went out for the Packers, it seemed like they lost their juice, especially against the run. So I'd hate to think that the success of our run defense hinges on Devontae Wyatt. That just
can't be.
That's uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking maybe, well, Dallas figured something out. Like it's, we had teams that had 4 weeks now to see what we're doing on defense, and they figured it out. And I thought, well, maybe, you know, they run away from him. They do very quick passes, but I mean, goodness, Detroit and Washington must have had that same philosophy. In fact, I think Detroit lives on short passes, dinking and dunking to the receivers and backs and things like that. And the issue that happened in Detroit was the running back caught a ton of passes, but he got no yards because Cooper and Walker and were on these guys like immediately
right there.
Mm-hmm. That didn't happen this game. Like I felt like they completely, you know, it's like the short passing game worked. Running plays, you know, you get hit 3 yards, they'd fall forward another four. You know, it none of that happened, and I don't think it had anything to do with just Parsons. Like the rest of the defense just played so much more poor. And then you know, then you expose a little bit. Okay, our corners are not great. You know, that's, I don't think we ever thought that they were special, but
We thought, they were good enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Not good enough. Cause you, with backers running around, you know, a lot of pressure, you know, they could undercut, they wouldn't have to kind of defend the whole field, but they felt like, oh no, all of a sudden we relied on them to defend the field, knock a ball away from Perkins and things like that. And they, you know, that's where we're deficient. So
it started very well. We were complimenting Mixon on like, mm-hmm. batting down that crossing route, and we were so happy until that blocked extra point, because like the offense was clicking, the defense was playing. I thought this is gonna be an easy win, and boy was I wrong.
I'm gonna go back to where the cracks began. You remember the second half in the Cleveland game where the things Dave was talking about, you know, gang tackling. They forgot how to do that. And so they were standing around waiting for somebody else to bring the guy down. And he squirts through and gains an extra 7 yards. And that just wasn't happening the first couple of games. The guys were right there as a group, and they were shutting that stuff down. And that started to show. And I thought, well, again, aberrations. It's not who they are, because I've seen 2 games. Now, after seeing this game and second half difficulties they had against a poor offense in Cleveland, I'm beginning to wonder what the character of the defense is. I mean, is it what we saw the first 2 games, or is it what we saw the last game and a half? I'm not really sure what to expect, you know, coming into after the bye when they got, I believe it's the Bengals, right? After the bye, is that right?
And I think that's right. I think that's
right. Yeah, and there'll be no Joe Burrow, which is will be a plus, but I thought, hey, no CeeDee Lamb, you know, and it's going to be great. Right. Well, right. I just don't know what to expect. And maybe that's, you know, it's sort of like that latchkey kid at home. And you don't know when mom is going to, is dad going to be drunk and beat us? I mean, we don't know what to expect with the Packers. And that's just not what I thought was the reality just a few weeks ago. It seems like the game we saw against Washington was still this month. Klaus is still in the U.S., you know, and that game, I remember walking back to, you know, where Paul and Carolyn had the tailgate for us. And, you know, we kind of sat around, and it just felt good. It felt like the beginning of a special ride. Now, it still might be, because as was pointed out today, I think it was Silverstein that noted that Philadelphia began last year 2-2 when they went into their bye, which apparently came at just the right time for them. And they had a great season the rest of the way in. And we've said on this podcast in the past, what you see in September is not necessarily what you're going to see in December or early January. So it's not like the season's lost, but it just feels bait and switch. You know, that we thought we were buying something, and when we got it out of the box at home, it didn't work. You know, and so what's going on here? It's not just the players on the field, though. I'm gonna say, you wonder about that time management, and I don't know that that's all on Love, at least based on the accounts that I've read today. And of course, LaFleur takes blame for everything, so it's hard to know.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Listen, I'm gonna take blame for things too. Let's, you know, the I don't know, some monsoon in the middle of the Pacific that, you know, wipes out. It's, I'll take the blame for that. You know, the I'll say it. Why? Because
was,
I won't be.
Was that you?
Yeah, it was me. That's why I'll take. Well, it wasn't me, but I'll take responsibility for it, because those are words that mean nothing, and I have no, you know, accountability for it. So why not say it? That's
I really can't imagine LaFleur going for a pass with 8 seconds left in a game like that. I mean, the clock stopped at 1 second, and what I saw from the TV feeds, he was like telling Love something when he came to the sideline afterwards. So I guess he's taking the blame to protect his players, which is fine. But I think that was all on Love. That's what I saw on from the screen. But those in the know might know different. But it was a weird, weird call. That's for sure.
Silverstein laid it on the coach. But he always does, though. And he was saying it's a coach's job to get him ready in that position of the game, to drill it in practice. You know, they have a 4-minute drill and 2-minute drill that they work on in practice. And in Silverstein's opinion, they needed to be better prepared to face that moment, and they weren't. There was no sense of urgency, he said. He noted that they were lackadaisical coming to the line. They didn't seem like they had drilled for this situation. And that's why he laid it on LaFleur's doorstep. I don't know if that's fair, because LaFleur doesn't play, but I don't know what goes on in practice. I don't know what the expectations are. But he thought it was the coach's fault. I don't know what to believe, other than the fact that Jordan Love is, I think he's a good quarterback. I'm glad they have him. I think they can win with him. But he's not, at this point in his career, he's not special. And maybe that's not fair, because Aaron Rodgers wasn't Aaron Rodgers at the beginning of his third season. Neither was Brett Favre. Now, I don't think we're going to see any kind of a gold jacket being put on Jordan Love any day, but maybe it's too soon to make a verdict on this guy. But I was, as you guys know from sitting next to me, I was very uncomfortable there when the clock is rolling and rolling. And they're like, yeah, let's see how it's going here. Yeah, okay, maybe. Oh, yeah, I think we'll snap the ball now. It's like, come on, you know, let's go here. And also, I haven't seen the replay of this. That looked like a dangerous pass, too. I mean, besides the fact the time running out, it felt like it, you know, was dangerous to throw it there at that particular time. So the clock management, not just there, but also at the end of the first half when they had the fumble. And Klaus, you mentioned this earlier, that all they had to do there is run out the clock. We're kind of disorganized at this point. Don't try to force anything to happen. I think they had 42 seconds and they really wanted to get down the field and score, probably because Dallas is going to get the ball to start the second half. But instead they wound up fumbling and giving a rather easy touchdown to Dallas. Is that Jordan Love being sloppy with the ball, or was that a head coach who got greedy, or maybe both?
If you recall, I think in that series, Love threw it down the field that was almost intercepted, but Dobbs kind of reached up and almost played like he knocked it down, and otherwise it would have been intercepted. And I think on the next play then, Kraft got a first down. I think they threw a short pass and he got a first down.
Yeah,
I remember we were thinking to ourselves, like, you know, maybe it's just best. It's time's running out. Like, let's just sit on this now. Yeah. We thought that. We're not coaches. You know, we've seen a lot of football in our day and kind of have some sense of strategy. And that was our impression kind of across the board, but not for the one who matters. So, and then the other is at the end of the game, I think Klaus, you had mentioned you thought the time management was good. They did time manage the end of the game to get a field goal. They time managed it to get a field goal at the end of the overtime, but not time management to get a touchdown. Like, I think you should have done a hurry up, if you get close and there's a minute 20 in the, like, and with all your timeouts, then you can kind of imagine slow it down or look, don't, you know, I don't, you're not playing the Buffalo Bills where, you know, or the Kansas City, like in that one playoff game where they like scored in 3 seconds back and forth. Back. Like, I think you would have had a good chance to, even if you gave the ball back, but they sort of timed it so that they really only, they took their time. And so that if they got a touchdown, it would have had a, they basically had one, maybe two shots at it. Now the play they ran to Golden lost them 3 yards and a bunch of time. Like that killed the whole thing, that play. If they could have kind of moved that forward, you know, then they might have been in a chance to have a couple of shots at the end zone. But not that I think that was a bad play. I don't know if that worked. It's a good play. If it doesn't, it's a bad. I'm not saying that it was a bad play, but it that was a killer. But they didn't have enough time to recover, you know. And how angry would it be? We just have to really recognize if he had thrown it, and there was zero time on the clock and they had no chance for a field goal. Oh. Even this, the narrative. And the difference between narrative really being super negative, where you know everyone thinks LaFleur should be fired, to here where we're kind of like, is not because of anything the Packers. That was like fate or circumstance. Like it just the so razor thin to being massively disappointed with a huge screw up.
If we had the clock management team who had pressed the button just a little bit earlier than. Oh, a little bit later, I mean, then it would have said 0-0. So we got so lucky on that one.
Dallas, you would think that time management person would be like, well, if it had been on zero, I wouldn't have felt like we got screwed that last second. Maybe you could have replayed it. But if it had gone, the ball would have hit the end zone and it ticked a second after it hit the wall or whatever it hit. Would you have felt like we got screwed? No, like, but they stopped it right at 1 second. I can't believe that happened, actually.
Well, so let's talk about something happier. The special teams. Now that's... they have one of the highest paid special teams coordinators in the National Football League. And he's actually, I think isn't he associate head coach? Isn't that his... associate head coach and special teams coordinator, you know, and he's kind of like the bench coach in baseball, the guy who always stands next to the manager or sits next to him on the bench to bounce ideas off of. And I think that's why I said the warm security blanket, that's what Bisaccia is. But maybe he should keep that role and they should hire somebody to coach the special teams because, again, not only we've already talked about the debacle with the extra point, but late in the game, they gave up not one, but two 40-yard-plus returns. Now, luckily, the second one was brought back. But late in the game, at the critical moment, you're letting them squirt through and get that kind of field position in a game like that? Yeah. That's, you know, if you're going to be a Super Bowl team, you can't have vulnerabilities like that. We saw it a few years ago. Where special teams cost him a playoff game, and it cost him games earlier in the season too. That's what led to the change to Bisaccia, and I'm not comfortable with whatever it is they're doing. They just looked outfoxed, and according to the analysts that I read this morning, the same formation that wound up with the blocked extra point, the same one that Cleveland ran. To get the blocked field goal the week before.
Oh.
You'd like to think that they could have locked that thing down in the meantime.
Look, 5 more weeks and they're going to get it down. They'll get through the bye, maybe a few more games, they'll figure it out, Chris. Maybe it'll be the offseason. They'll have to, you know, you can't expect them to recover a mistake a week later. Like, come on.
And then they flipped those three guys who were on the right side before. They flipped them to the left side later in the game. And I thought, there's no fucking way they're going to be able to adjust to that.
These guys are geniuses. Yeah. Yeah.
So
playing with magic over there in Dallas. Yeah.
I don't know if you guys want to belabor that point or not, but that got under my skin as well.
I have another special teams thing though, that drove me crazy. Okay. We talked a lot. We couldn't quite figure out what is the kickoff rule? Like what's going on? Why are they running to the 50 and we're starting on the 20? Like, you at a minimum should run it to like the 30 and get on the 35. So Dallas figured out, Yeah, it was an unfair advantage. That's called rich passaccia. That's our unfair advantage.
Exactly.
So somehow Dallas figured out if you punt short and have it kind of bounce along, our returner will catch it in the end zone and you get to start at the 20. He doesn't, somehow if it's bouncing, he's not being told to move up and catch it, or, you know, if you field it, go. But, you know, they figured out they bounce it in there, he'll kneel on it in the end zone and get it at the 20, which is a real disadvantage in the way the football is played now. You should get it at the 35, you know, 30 at a minimum now. Yeah. But the 20 is a 15-yard penalty almost every time you start. And that happened quite a bit in the second half. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I kind of figured it out, even though I'm not a paid coach. You know, I used a lot of my history, my brain, and, like, history of trying to solve things that I don't normally see, but try to work out things that my eyes are in front of me. And thought, why don't we do that? Why don't we bounce it a few yards short of the end zone and see if we can stop this guy from catching on a fly and running it to the 50-yard line? But no, we instead kick it in the air to this guy. And, you know, he consistently seemed to have a huge lane on the, I guess, as we were looking on the right side, I felt like there's no Packers over there. How is that happening? This special teams is a disaster. Do you know who Rich Passaccia is to Matt LaFleur? Have you read the Lord of the Rings books?
I bet you Klaus has.
Oh, yeah.
And you've seen the movies? You know, in the Return of the King?
He's the worm from tongue? Or?
Yes, that's him. Yeah. The king is all old and decrepit because he's got this advisor who's like whispering poison in his ear. And he's like, oh, and when they finally get this advisor, the king, like, you know, comes back to youth. And what was his name? What was that character?
Wormtongue.
Wormtongue, yes.
It's Wormtongue. It's in the Two Towers book. He's secretly working for Saruman.
Yes. So
yeah.
What's happening, Chris. You need maybe read the books, but yeah. Wormtongue Passaccia. We've got Trapdoor Love and Wormtongue Passaccia. How can we make these things so ubiquitous that you run this guy out of town? Because we have to do something. This guy is secretly sabotaging our seasons.
He's been a highly, and this sounds like Mike McCarthy, highly successful coach, and he has been. But I was teaching Klaus a new word today. Klaus's English is beautiful. I mean, it outstanding. It really is. But there are some words, and the word was gravitas, that I was trying to explain what I think Matt LaFleur lacks is that kind of weight and substance. Not necessarily physical weight, but sometimes that, if you remember our friend, you know, we had a friend, Dave and I had a friend in a place where we used to work together. Name is Mark. And Mark had gravitas. When he walked into a room, you felt it. When he opened his mouth, you felt it. There was a sense of respect immediately, maybe awe in some ways. Some people just have that. I think Mike Holmgren had that. I think Dan Campbell does, you know, I mean, that there's just something about them. And there are some coaches now, I think, that have that it too, that thing. I think Matt LaFleur, I think, is an excellent tactician, but I think his approach is more clinical. You know, we're going to break things down, we're going to do things, we're going to get everyone prepared, but when you get to the game and we're trying to add that little extra emotional thing, because football is an emotional game. You're beating your heads against other guys for all this. You've got to have that extra bit. It can't just be the technical aspects and the preparation. I think he's got all of that down. But when the game starts, and you mentioned, you know, having Passaccia there, I think there's a certain lack, at this point anyway, of gratitude. Now, I could change my... If they have a great run and they win the Super Bowl, I'm... Everyone knows I'm full of crap anyway, but that would underscore it, you know? So I'm just wondering, this is year seven, right, for LaFleur. And they have been successful. They won a lot of games. He's got one of the better records, you know, of coaches in NFL history. You know, he's been very good. But that now we're starting to think about the big step. And I think the big step, you know, may require something more intangible than just really good film study and, really good game planning. There has to be that extra thing that gets guys to play above who they are. One of the things Carlos and I were talking about today, when you were busy working, Dave, was the fact that when LaFleur gets mad, it's more of a tantrum than, you know, a powerful anger. You know, he's jumping around and he gets all red in his face, although his hair never moves. Fantastic.
No.
But he doesn't have the power that comes with the anger. That this is unfair to him, but Vince Lombardi and the certain guys, Barry Alvarez, for people that follow, you know, Wisconsin football, there are just certain guys that have a particular kind of power, and I don't know that LaFleur has that. I'm not going to go as far as Steve True, who says that LaFleur is weak and a wimp and all. I'm not going to go that far, but I don't know that he has that extra thing you need to command a room of alpha males.
Of those six seasons, he made the playoffs in five of them.
Yes.
Which, given the rules of the NFL, that through the draft and everything and through the schedule makes it harder for the successful teams the following season, that's actually quite an achievement. And you complaining about this now reminded me of a Bridget Jones movie. Bridget Jones is sitting in a prison in Thailand and complaining about her boyfriend because he's folding his underwear the wrong way and it irritates her. And all the other ones are complaining about their husbands making them a prostitute, beating them up, raping them every day. And she's sitting there and she's unhappy about the way he folds his underwear. So be careful what you wish for.
Are you saying that's what we are? We're complaining about the...
You're complaining about a head coach, which is actually quite good. Successful.
Well,
so be careful what you wish for, because being an NFL coach is hard. There's people working against you every single Sunday, doing their very best to make you look bad.
Yes.
And I think the statistics, he's been through quarterback change, going from a Hall of Fame quarterback to new quarterback, and still they qualify for the playoffs. And many teams don't do that. Look at the New England Patriots when Tom Brady quit. Look at Pittsburgh Steelers when Big Ben retired. And having that transition is hard. So, okay, he might not be Campbell in Detroit, and in a fist fight he would lose. But I'm not jumping on that bandwagon that we need to fire a coach that made the playoffs five or six times during a quarterback transition.
I'm not saying we...
Yeah,
I think we should fire him. I do think he... I think it's possible his highest strength... Is it called the Peter Principle when you get...
When you get promoted to your level of incompetence.
A level of competence, yes. He might be a really effective offensive coordinator where he can sort of live in the X's and O's, although... he didn't really show it last night or this season so far, which is another thing. But he may have been elevated one step higher than where his ultimate, you know, strength is. And you need that person with gravitas, you know, to be the head coach and let him do his thing. That's possible. Like, he still won a lot of games and all that.
Come on. The offense scored 40 points. He's the offensive coordinator.
That's the worst defense in the NFL.
And he's consistently had bad special teams. And he has done things like hold on to Joe Barry I think well past his expiration date in Green Bay. Like, and I feel like he struggles with, that part of the game where he could make, you know, some changes. And it's certainly time management and other things. I mean, I think you could still have criticism for him that he could be strong in some things. Organizing during the week, I don't know. He might be great at that. Running good practices, you know, doing great team events, running, you know, an offense. But I think there certainly are deficiencies there that maybe in the next 5 to 10 years, just like maybe Andy Reid, you know, had needed all that time to be that successful, and he needs that time. But I think there are very fair criticisms of him. It's too bad we can't help him out. I mean, I just think if Bisaccia is the guy that is supposed to then be that person to help him sort of mature, I would like to think, well, that guy who also is responsible for a part of the team is also being excellent. But that person who's your advisor is also ahead of what the weakest part of the team is year after year after year. It makes you wonder who that advisor is, right? That's I think that's something that maybe should be addressed. Ed Policy, I hope you're listening to this, that you need to get Worm Tongue out of there.
Well, I think it's time to let Tom Freeman say a few words. Wrote us a very thoughtful.
Is he here? Is he here too?
Well, he is here, but just his words are here. But you know, Tom is a lawyer. He's a smart guy. University of Wisconsin Law School. The whole smash. Now he's no Judy, okay, but he's still not bad as the second Freeman, okay. So he says, good teams find a way to win games when they play poorly. I'd have to look back to find out more examples, but you couldn't say that about the Buccaneers in Week 1-3, or about the Eagles 4-0. The Eagles had, and I didn't look this up, but I'm going to trust Tom. The Eagles had 0 passing yards in the second half yesterday.
I heard something about that. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're 4-0 nonetheless. You are not going to find a way to pull out a win every time you play bad, but you should be able to win some of them. The Packers are 0-1-1 in games in which they played poorly against inferior opponents. So maybe they just aren't as good as I thought they were. That's a bitter pill to swallow when I have to wait 2 weeks for the next game. But on the other hand, who even remembers that the Packers had a 2-game losing streak in November of 1996 on their way to winning Super Bowl 31? Or that they had a 2-game losing streak in December of 2010 when they really needed just to win games to get into the playoffs? But they went on to win the Super Bowl after that season, so all of that is forgotten. Maybe in a few months, we will all chuckle about this 2-game non-winning streak in September. And thank you, Tom. I think those are very balanced and very fair. I think good teams, you know, when they play bad, they do find a way to win. And he gave some good examples there. And the fact that how the season ends is going to color your opinions. Dave, I don't remember exactly, but in 2010, didn't the Packers start out poorly? I think they had a game.
I thought they started out well and then had like a 3-game losing streak where Finley got hurt. And so it looked like, you know, we were really taking a dive. And
they lost their safety, Morgan Burnett.
Oh, Burnett. Was that?
They lost him early in the season. Because remember, they had a ton of injuries that season to people that were thought to be critical. I mean, how can you win the Super Bowl without your starting safety, your leading pass catcher, your tight end? But they won. And you just don't know how this is going to play out as we go forward. So we are creating an artifact right now that is locked in time. And as Tom says, we may look back on this in December and chuckle, in our case, with bags over our head and embarrassment. Or, you know, you don't know. Maybe this is a precursor, you know, to having a disappointing 7-10 season. I don't believe that right now. But the fact is, you really don't know what's going to happen. What kind of injuries are going to happen in the bye week? Packers aren't playing. You know, maybe Minnesota loses Carson Wentz, you know, who's been playing well for them. And maybe that colors that, you know, or Caleb Williams gets hurt, Goff, whatever. You know, there are all kinds of things that can happen to open up other possibilities. But for right now, at this moment, I'm not very comfortable. And it sounds like Klaus is more comfortable than the two of us. Is that a fair rendering of where we are right now?
Feeling pretty good about the season so far?
What you have to remember, I support Newcastle United in the Premier League. They have been, over the last 20 years, they have been really, really bad. This last spring, they won their first trophy in 70 years. So Green Bay Packers is by far the most successful team that I support in any sport. So I tend to see the upside. that you don't always win every game, you don't always, but it gives me a lot of entertainment. So, and I'm not so down on that draw. They didn't lose. You are speaking like they lost. They didn't lose. And the offense put on 40 points, which makes me think that the offense is not bad. And the defense, I hope this was their day off, really, that they can tighten up. And with if the offense continues to play like they played yesterday and putting up like 30 plus points, we will win more than we will lose. And so I'm still quite confident. And as we always say, it's how the team is in November, December that really, really counts. Now you just mustn't lose so many games that you can't qualify for the playoffs.
Fair enough, Dave?
And I'm not ready to give up hope yet, but I do hope. I mean, the game in itself is one thing. I'm thinking about the future of this team, and I think the takeaways of the first four games, I think right now, is you can't just expect this is going to be a four lineman rush and play everyone back, and you're going to get pressure with four. Like, I hope they're going back and saying, okay, we can get more pressure with four when Parsons is rushing, but we still need to be creative. We need to sometimes show five, sometimes show six. We need to rotate guys around. We still need to be creative on defense and not just be playing vanilla and we're so much better than everybody else. So I think that's one on defense. I do think on offense, I think they're still trying to discover exactly who they are. And I think the offensive line shifting around is really a problem. Like, they can't quite figure out if they should run first, pass first. I feel like they're throwing a lot at the wall. Should they jet sweep? Should they attack with the receivers? Like, what is the best offensive path for them? And I do think that LaFleur has in the past slowly figured that out each season. You'd like to think they come into a season where it's like, you know, they're humming. I think they're kind of feeling their way right now. 40 points is 40 points, but Dallas has got a bad defense. I don't think they're, for most of the game, very successful running the ball. And I don't feel like they said, well, if you're going to stop the run, we're going to do this. I don't know what this is. They didn't necessarily go deep a lot. They didn't use craft a lot. I don't know what they did, really. I wouldn't know how to describe their philosophy. I think it was run first. It didn't work. And then they tried a bunch of other things. Like, so I think they got to figure that out. And then special teams, they have to seriously sit down and look at their talent, look at their coaching, look what they're doing in special teams and say, enough is enough. I mean, either someone, I don't know if firing everybody is going to be the case, but if they spend an hour in practice on special teams and they spend all the rest of the time on everything else, they got to figure out, well, you know what? That hour is not enough because that their play is affecting the offense and the defense, and it's screwing everything else up that we're working on. How do we block? How do we return? How do we kick? How do we punt? Like, what's going on right now? Like, they need to sit down and evaluate that and get serious with it. So that, to me, if they can they go and end the season with 12 wins? They certainly could still. I think they have the talent is sort of running around there somewhere, but it's not quite where it should be right now, I think, after seeing this game. And I'm not ready to give up hope, though.
Well, our favorite home brewer, Carolyn Fix's husband, Paul, did write us. And Paul had this to say, and he talked about the offense, which he will allude to as kind of odd on a night in which they scored 40 points. As my dad and I were sitting in the basement sipping on some bourbon, which, why aren't you guys drinking that great beer that you made for us? I don't understand, but maybe they've had enough of that. All right. So he says, my mind kept going back to the offense. Something is different this year, but I can't put my finger on it. I feel like we have six plays we rotate through. There are too many times when we ran the ball instead of pushing it downfield. Too many throws to the guy in the flat 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage on second and long. Is it a lack of creativity? Is LaFleur playing not to lose instead of playing to win? Are the offensive line and wide receiver injuries becoming too much? Now, again, they played without three of their starters on the offensive line in this past game. And, of course, they don't have Watson, and they don't have Jaden Reed. So, okay. Anyway, Paul says, I feel terrible complaining about an offense that just put up 40 points, but What are your thoughts on this? Am I going crazy? I don't know. I would say I reject that entirely because Paul's a graduate of UW Stevens Point. No crazy people at that institution. So you heard Paul's comments. Homebrewer extraordinaire. What do you guys think?
I've spoken my mind on this offense. Scoring 40 points in the NFL is hard. I cheered for the offense many times last night, so I'm not that unhappy. I think we might have something in Matthew Golden. I think he's having, each game, he's a rookie. He still does dumb things like running backwards, which was kind of frustrating, and not fair catching. He really needs to learn that. But he had some good catches, good technique. He gets open. Maybe on the first one, he got lucky because he was running somebody else's route. But I think there's some real talent there. So going forward, he might become a new star. So that's good. And they are doing this, they are putting 40 points up with a makeshift offensive line, which is also very hard. So I think the reason why we don't see any consistency now is because of that makeshift offensive line that are doing their best. They have some rookies. They have changed it up the most in the NFL, I think. That is also very hard to overcome. So I think we will, once everybody gets healthy, which I hope they do, I think, and we get a healthy, the offensive line, first choice in every position, I think we can expect a lot of our offense. We have good receivers. We have a okay quarterback. We have an okay running back. Mm-hmm. And at the start of the game, they were mixing it up a bit more than Paul said, I thought at least. But yeah, so my expectation is that the offense can only, I can't complain. I can't fault them when they put up 40 points and score on every single drive the last half of the game.
All right, so there will be no beer for Klaus at our next get-together. Dave, you have...
If it's coming in the offense, 40 points is good. I think Love, in a lot of ways brought the team to a position where they could have won. And I think that's, his... I would say I don't feel like he's the best under-pressure quarterback, but I think last night he certainly performed when he needed to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll be interesting against a better defense. I don't think Dallas is known for being a great defense.
I think they're last statistically coming into this game.
Okay, so they're fair enough. This offense, if I were to, especially if I know my offensive line is challenged with three down, is I would do a lot of Jacobs in space. I think the guy catches the ball. I don't have my stats in front of me. I don't know how many catches he had, but I know he had a couple that was at least one I can remember that was pretty successful. Right, five catches.
I can see a lot.
And I certainly think you could have a lot more catches for Kraft. I thought every time Kraft catches the ball, unlike Golden or others who are running backwards or, falling, Kraft seems to be able to get past the first down marker. Most third downs, I think, go through Kraft. I'd like to see. I do think Golden is a work in progress, and maybe that's where things progress as you find what is his role exactly. Dobbs had a great game. Mr. Touchdown.
Yep. He had three touchdowns.
Is fantastic. He catches the ball. Golden caught that fourth down play. That was a great play. That was really tough. I will say, I think now if I was on Dallas there, but here's what I would complain about if I was Dallas. On that third down, before Golden caught that fourth down, Dallas flooded the line of scrimmage and went after Love. And Love threw it, I think, 1,000 feet in the air, and it ended up landing out of bounds. And they went to fourth down. Fourth down, we called a timeout, but they had lined up three. They're only going to rush four now. And then we called a timeout. They came back and only rushed four again. That was their – and gave Love enough time to scan the field. I don't care if you – maybe you have double amount of people in coverage. It doesn't feel like you can cover a receiver long enough, no matter how many people you have in a few zone. Dallas should have done exactly what he did on the third down. If they'd have done that exactly on fourth down, I think the Packers lose. But we ended up getting that fourth down play. And I do worry that teams are going to see if you can kind of come up at Love up the middle, he's flustered. He's not shifty. He's not, he can run, but I don't see him as very quick. So if you kind of get pressure up the middle, you're going to grab him or you're going to grab the ball away or something. And when we play good teams like the Eagles, Kansas City, you know, some of these others, they're going to see that, and that's where he's going to be challenged. We're going to have to be ready to have an answer for that.
Okay, before I give it to Klaus, I do want to correct myself. 4 catches for Jacobs, but he was the leading receiver in yardage, believe it or not, 71
yeah,
yards.
Yeah, see, I think there could be a lot there. Yep. And well, who was second? Was Wilson? Because Wilson had a bunch of catch and runs as well.
Second, there's actually a two-way tie between Dobbs and Golden. They both had 58 okay. yards. And then Kraft was just 2 yards behind, 56. Very balanced. I think they had 10 guys that caught balls again, you know. So,
how many did Wilson, yards did Wilson have?
Wilson had 3 catches, 37 yards.
Yeah, over 10 of,
and
you know,
that was
average.
The second highest by average on the team. Yeah.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Klaus, you...
Yeah, that's just one key moment, at least for me. Being European, we have a long-standing tradition of blaming the referees when something goes wrong. And on that last drive for Dallas, I thought there was a clear intentional grounding.
Yeah.
The last drive in overtime, and that almost drove me mad.
I'm glad
because
you mentioned
that. And if that hadn't... If that had been called, I think we win the game. And I really watched it in replay, and I really can't understand how they can defend not calling it. And it's and why I guess New York is like a referee panel is watching the game as well. And if they see a clear mistake, they let the referee know that they might take a look at it. And it was in overtime, and is it automatic review, or is that you can't challenge that because it's just
judgment?
I'm asking because I really thought when he threw that ball, I was yelling out intentional grounding, and I saw it all the way from Sun Prairie in Madison. Oh, that was so frustrating.
Yeah. That seemed to be a gimme call for them. I don't know if they called it that. They thought it slipped out of his hand, so it was like a mistake that it landed where it did. But to me, I don't think that
it was
matter,
a mistake
right?
that it landed where it did, but it's still intentional grounding.
Yeah, I think it's he either fumbled it or he threw it. And where he threw it, he was in the pocket. It was no receiver. You know, so either you're going to call it a fumble or a pass, and that by definition should be
great. Yeah, and we picked it up as well.
But it wasn't a fumble.
Packer picked it up. So if it was a fumble, we also win the game.
That's true. Yeah, that was a bad call.
There were some officiating things. The one that really got under my skin was moving the ball that, you know, Jenkins.
The false start near the goal line.
I've watched so much football. They routinely do that, but now it's a point of emphasis. And like he was getting an extra. Yeah, that's what they said in the game.
Did they? Okay.
I think we're pretty drunk by that time, Dave. Yeah.
Yeah, I was pretty gone.
Yeah. So I think he was lying on the ground and he put it, you know, so he could snap it 4 inches maybe. And they call that. Now it didn't wind up hurting him, but still it's like, really? You're going to call that? I mean, you're missing. I would have rather they got that call right. That Klaus reference. That's a big thing that changes the game. I don't think this was a thing you want to call. It's like calling, oh yeah, there was a guy, you know, 50 yards away who had tugged on a jersey. So we're going to take away that long run you made over here on the right side, because on the left side, 40 yards away from the play, there was a tugging on the... I mean,
it's a victimless crime. Yeah. It's not like they move the ball. It gives you any advantage to, like, pick the ball up like that. It's ridiculous. I've never seen that before in all my life of watching games. It's ridiculous.
It's like they're over-regulating some of these things that don't really have to be, you know?
Yeah.
Here's a chance to play a little game, okay? When was the last Packers tie? Did you read about this? Did you see this at all?
I know you were against the Eagles.
Yeah, so you probably didn't
see it. Was the Eagles 9-9 game or something weird like that?
What year?
I want to say it's early Rodgers years. So I'm going to say 2008?
I would say later, 2015.
Close. Let me It was the previous game that the three of us attended was in this year, 2018. It was the year that Mick McCarthy's last year. It was in week two of 2018. And of course, they followed that, you know, with a disastrous season. That was their last tie. And I think it was Philadelphia. Didn't write it down for some reason, you know. But again, I think I was drinking some of that root beer brandy or whiskey.
How spiked our root beer.
I got to tell you, we went to Woodman's, which is a big grocery store chain in Wisconsin. I don't think they're outside of Wisconsin. I'm not sure. The biggest honking grocery store. I mean, I could really tell that I was from the sticks in the country. Hey, look what your folks got here. You got a big and the liquor store with alcohol piled to the ceiling, including, and I forget the brand name, Old Smoky or something.
Old Smoky, Tennessee.
Yeah. I mean, and I thought, all right, I'll try some of this. It was surprisingly good. So Klaus got the idea, hey, let's put a little Sprecher on top of that. And, you know, you don't even notice the alcohol until you stop drinking it. Then you notice it. And there were three middle-aged guys who were taking naps after we enjoyed that yesterday afternoon. So, yeah.
Exactly right, yeah. Couldn't make it through two games.
I have emptied out my list of things. What do you guys got? You have any other spare things from the games? Okay.
I think it's time for betting lines. Klaus, do you have anything left?
No, I think I've said what I wanted to say.
Let's be clear that we're not going to set the betting lines for the next game because it's 2 weeks away. We'll come back with a podcast next week. No Klaus, though. But we'll come back with a betting lines podcast and anything else that's happened in the meantime. So if you're trying to get your gambling on, come back next week. We'll have a podcast for you then. For right now, are you wagging your finger at me, Klaus, for God's sake?
Yeah. I just remembered one thing I wanted to say. This might be a long time till I can say something again. It's of course, it's about the referees again. So I just want you to comment on this, what your thought is, because I've been watching a lot of NFL through like 30 years or something. And one thing I seem to notice is if one team is trailing, they seem to get all the 50-50 calls from the referees.
Keep it interesting.
Yeah. Is there like in the refereeing school, if one team is trailing, give them the benefit of the doubt. So we get the close game, so everybody's watching the commercials in the fourth quarter.
What do you think, Dave?
I think it's there could be something there. I think it's human nature to it. Like Klaus, you've ref before in different. I think I've refed many times, not in football, but I think there is a natural inclination. Like if someone makes a mistake, they're down by five, down by whatever it is. Like you let it go, or what difference does it make? Or like that's a human nature thing to do. So I wonder if there's a little bit of that rather than the NFL. You know, turning this into all-star wrestling.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that. And I'm not saying they're favoring one team in particular. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. Now that I said that. Because I tend to see there's a tendency, at least, that a trailing team gets the 50-50 calls. Because there's always some 50-50 calls. Was it pass interference? Was it not pass interference? It might be. And one more thing. Game last night. Was there any pass interference? I don't think so. That's a rare thing.
There were a couple.
4 hours of football and no pass interference.
Which is unusual. I don't know if we have a list of those someplace. I don't recall any, but I do recall thinking that there should have been a couple. But
there yeah, well, That intentional grounding non-call is what I'm taking home.
That one really was bothersome. So,
okay, that's it. Back to the betting lines.
Okay, so we're going to recap last week's lines. We won't have new ones though until next week. So, Dave, why don't you recap?
I think for time, I'm going to kind of go through these relatively quickly. But we had three people that had eight correct. We had to go to the tiebreaker. So let me go through these, and you'll see who the winner is this week. For number one, quarterback rating for Love, you set that line at 95, Chris. It was 118.1. I actually wouldn't have guessed what that quarterback rating was. You could have told me 130 because his numbers were good. His mistake was a fumble. Yeah. So 118 is pretty good. Yeah. Jacobs yards per carry, you set the line at 3.8. It was 3.9. Very, very well done. Number three, how many turnovers would the Packers get? You set the line at actually, it's positive for them, negative against. You set the line at 1.5. It was negative one. Okay. Number four, total passing yards for Dallas. You set the line at 222. They had 319. Number five.
I really believed in the defense until yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you might have to reset. Number five, how many tackles plus sacks? Sacks being 2 points. For Parsons, you set that line at 8. He only had 4.
Yeah.
Leading receiver, Chris, you said Dobbs. I said Kraft. Klaus said Golden. It was Dobbs who had the most.
It's almost like an interception by TJ Watt. It's almost like that.
Yeah, really good call. Number seven, how many penalties on special teams plus Morgan on the offensive line? You set the line at 4.5. It was only 2, so Morgan only had, I think, one penalty, which was pretty, and the special teams had one, so pretty vast improvement. Yeah. 7.5, was there a jet sweep to Golden? The answer was yes.
Of course.
Mike. At 7.34, I asked, how many times would they show Jerry Jones? Actually, I asked, would they show more than 4 times, yes or no? Mike has them counted, and apparently they show Jerry Jones 69 times. According to Mike.
What?
Yeah, 69. I think he might be fooling around with us there with that number.
I'm guessing that he had some of Paul's beer, probably. I was certainly seeing things after 12 ounces or 16 ounces of that, so yeah.
At least root beer whiskey.
We had to go to the Paul fix the tiebreaker. Packer points. They had 40 points. And the winner who picked 37 points was Josh. Josh, I don't know your last name. I'm sorry if I should, but you are the winner this week. You're kicking out Edward Rees-Thomas out of the 2-week vacation he's taken at the Packers Therapy Hotel Casino. Congratulations, Josh. You're the winner this week. As Chris said, we will do a betting lines next week during the bye. We'll do a quick one just for the betting lines and maybe with something else. We can do pop culture, different things. Yeah. There you go. Any comments on the winner there as far as Josh is concerned?
Well, I thought you were going to be joshing us, but I guess not. Yeah.
See, what people don't understand is this is the kind of nonsense I've been putting up with for like 3 days.
we can kind of do a little travelogue because the three of us have been together since Friday afternoon, and we've had a lot of fun, and we will maybe talk more about that next week after we set the betting lines, and we can talk about the news that has occurred. Klaus has left the room for some reason. He held up 2 fingers. I think he maybe has to go to the bathroom. I don't know.
No, I since it's the end of the podcast, I just want to mention that Packers Therapy won a prize last few days because we attended the Toad Hall pub quiz in Racine. It's a very prestigious quiz they held in Racine. And the Packers Therapy team were me and Dave, and sadly Chris couldn't attend, so his stand-in was Dave's father, Don, who is 85. And what do you know? We, going into the last question, we were saying to ourselves, nobody does a comeback from the front. And what do you know? We won the whole pub quiz.
That's so, a way of phrasing that.
So Packers Therapy is now written in gold across the Toad Hall plaque, and we even won $30 to spend next time on Toad Hall. And a big shout out to Dave's father, who complimented the team excellently. At an age of 85, he was an essential part of the team, and some of the more trickier baseball questions we would totally failed without him.
Well, I think it was shrewd of you guys to choose as a category gynecology. And I think that probably led you to victory right there. So
gynecology for yeah, 1,000, Alex. That's what you did.
Boom. Okay. Now I believe, Dave, you have an engagement you need to be at here shortly. So I guess we can probably wrap it up here with the idea that we will. Oh, yes, please.
Real quick, I do have a couple. I wanted to make sure if you're going to write in a limerick, you're going to get the time.
Oh, please.
Just really please quick. When Brad did write in trapdoor. I think Dave has minted a new one here. So trapdoor this week, worm tongue this week. So I keep bringing the juice here. But quick, let's just do Bill and Delafield wrote this in. There once was a team from Green Bay whose defense made Dallas all fray. With a love-like pass, they kicked some soft grass and sent the sad boys on their way.
Nice sentiment, though.
All right, let me do Kevin P. here.
Ah, yes.
The Packers in Cleveland were just a mess. The outcome in Dallas is just a guess. They say they're America's team, but that's Jerry's crazy dream. His last big win is recorded on VHS.
That was fantastic.
Well done, Professor Parsnell. Well done, sir. Excellent.
And I'll leave you with this. Edward Rees-Thomas said, second week in a row at the Packers Motel and Casino, and you barely even notice the smell anymore. So that's good news.
That's the great thing. The longer you're there, you don't even notice it after a while. What we did is we have a new scent we pump into the rooms. It's called Eau de Dumpster, and it's not for everybody. But a lot of people, after a few days there, they kind of like it. And when they get home, it's like, it doesn't smell right here, you know?
Yeah, right.
There's no decaying banana peels. Yeah. Well, speaking of decaying banana peels, that was kind of how that game felt to me anyway yesterday, of a 40-40 tie. I'm glad that a lot of America was entertained on Sunday Night Football, so we can all walk away with some sense of pride in that. Dave and I will be back next week. Klaus will be on his 2 weeks worth of, what do they do, Klaus? Do they chain you to some kind of machinery that you're not allowed to leave the hospital for 2 weeks, but then they reward you by giving you a month free? So that's something anyway. So Klaus will not be with us, unfortunately, but it'll be Dave and I. Back. Dave, will you be under the big stainless steel arch in St. Louis?
I sure hope so. Yes. Okay. It's been a road for a long time. So, I should be back at the home office.
Excellent. And I'll be back in Plover then. Reality will return. But until that time, I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And I'm Dr. Klaus.
And that is Packers Therapy.